always got utter belief in it.
And somehow she's found the acceleration.
Welcome everyone to the Let'sRun.com Track Talk Podcast. The 10 went down on Saturday, and a lot of men ran fast. Eight guys broke 27 minutes, which is the second most for any race in history, led by Grant Fisher's 26:52. Nico Young also ran 26:52 to break the collegiate record and become, at the age of 21, the youngest American ever under 27. We also had national records in the men's race for Sweden, South Africa, Australia, Guatemala, and India. So you know Rojo's all over that. In the women's race, Alicia Monson's American record attempt wound up as a run to the restroom. Stomach issues derailed her chances. Instead, it was Sigi Gebrselama of Ethiopia getting the win in a U.S. soil record of 29:48, while Wayne Kaladi hit the Olympic standard for the Americans, big PB for her. Plus, in the men's 1500, Centro ran 3:38. They only finished fifth. Is that good news for Centro? Bad news for Centro? Indifferent. We'll break it down. On the East Coast, Abel Kipchumba and Caroline Biokele-Grovedal won the New York City Half Marathon. Weldon Johnson was there with boots on the ground reporting. Kenny Spekele ran 63:59. What does that mean for his Olympic chances? And in South Africa, Letsile Tobogo just ran 44:29 for 400 meters. We'll check in on Rojo's Noah Lyles panic meter. Should be a great episode. This is Jonathan Galt. I am joined by Robin and Weldon Johnson to break it all down. Weldon, congratulations. Yale men's basketball, Ivy League champions. You're in the tournament. You know, if you want to take Friday off, Thursday off, whenever their game is, they're playing Auburn. Totally understandable, even though you're the boss, so you make those decisions and I don't. But anyway, hope you guys are in a good mood.
Doing great, John. I'll be taking the next 2 weeks off as long as this run continues. Just everything's firing in all cylinders for me right now. On the Monday call, I was compared to Roy Firestone. Not sure the young people out there even know who Roy Firestone was, but it was just the ultimate compliment.
I gave that compliment to Weldon.
This was our Monday staff call, by the way, that for you guys unfamiliar with the inner workings of Let'sRun.com. Every Monday morning, we check in and talk about running and then a whole host of other things, some of which are not suitable for this podcast.
I gave the compliment to Weldon because I listened to his interview with Noah Lyles and Lance Brawley, and I thought it was exceptional. There was no stuttering. A lot of times people on the forum complain about it when we interview in the mix zone. It's not very smooth. It was like very professional, very good, great questions, and it was flowed really quickly. So, super job. I do actually think it shows. In the mix zone, I'm just trying to get information. There's like 10 other people, so you kind of have to word it out. Like you only got like one shot, so you can't necessarily like segue nicely to the next question. You kind of need to get it out there quickly. But I think I'm the one that's on top of the world. We spent a lot of Friday's bonus podcast talking about how I've been, you know, a little bit unfiltered and maybe got myself in trouble. I thought I did it on the podcast. I actually did it on the message board. People were debating Nico Young's chances. Someone said he'd run 27:20. I was like, are you guys stupid? This guy will easily break 27 minutes. I'll bet up to $10,000 that he'll do it. And then a Let's Run visitor by the name of Jesse actually emailed, said, hey, I want to take you up on the bet. I debated on Friday whether to act like I didn't see the email, but if he's a Supporters Club member, he would know that I see the email. So we agreed. We came up with a plan. Jonathan Galt acted as the bank. We both Venmo John. We settled on $500, which was about what I was wanting to lose. It's easy to mouth off, and then we actually money's on the line. I'm okay, $500 is the most I'm going to go with this. Miss. We both Venmo John the money. We agreed that a DNS, that the bet was void. I also put in the caveat if his shoe fell off at any point in time, the bet was void. I was thinking about putting in if he got tripped. I decided just to let it run. And if he ran 27.00, John would get the money. And there was never any doubt. Nico Young, John, just I knew he had it in the bag the entire time.
Oh, right, my John? God. Yeah, classic Rojo. Like, offers a $10,000 bet, and then when someone calls him out on it, he lowers the limit to 500. And then this was probably, what, just off to halfway, maybe when the paces dropped out? Robert calls me up and says, just send him the money now. he's not breaking 27 minutes. It's over. And I'm like, Rojo, calm down, man. Like, the pace lights, they're right there. I know they're not, like, right on them, but you can still see them. There's plenty of time for him to turn it around. And should I get, like, 5% of this or something for keep making sure I didn't go through this transaction early, for keeping you on the rails? Because in the end, he broke it easily. He broke it by 8 seconds, 26:52. But you were panicked for a little bit there.
I know one thing, watching that race and getting worried that them falling behind that damn light, I wanted to jump through that TV screen and strangle Grant Fisher. When I coach my athletes, hey, I tell them to run cowardly too. Do none of the work, but come on, dude. Your PB is 26:33. I thought he was going to be leading this train here. Man, oh man. Thank you, Habtel Samuel, Mohamed, Grijalva. Who else did some of the work, John?
Adrian Wildschut.
Well, Wildschut, thank you. But I'm $1,000 richer than I would have been if it hadn't happened. Thank you, Nico Young. Thinking about making a t-shirt in your honor. Do I have to sign him to an IL deal, or can I just do it without his permission? Check your phones, guys. I'm going to send you a mock t-shirt design right now. See what you think. But I'm in a celebratory mood. By the way, speaking of t-shirts, I just got several $1,000s worth of shirts back in stock. We're out of a lot of extra smalls and extra large. We have it all. And since Nico did so well, and since I'm flush in cash, I'm going to give it back some to you. Go to shop.letsrun.com right now today. Enter the code 2652. That's 2652. Nothing else. Just the numbers, the four numbers, 2652. And you will get 26.52% off. That's like a $10 savings on a long sleeve, $8 savings on a short sleeve. Get it today. By the way, also, we have supporters club members from all over, but I recently was in Iceland on my way to Scotland. I'd never been there before. I don't think we have any supporters club members from Iceland. I want one for today. If you live in Iceland, enter the code, go to letsrun.com/subscribe, enter the code Iceland, and you'll get it for free. I'm going to charge you $20 because I got to send you the t-shirt. If you don't want the t-shirt, then it'll be free. I need an Iceland supporter. There you go. By the way, we want to hear from you. 844-LETS-RUN, 844-538-7786 is the phone number.
Robert, I do want to say, this Nico Young mock-up of the t-shirt you sent me, it's pretty awesome. Just says 12:57, 26:52, and then in big, bold letters, Nico MF Young. And that's pretty awesome. I mean, there's a 21-year-old American college kid has run 12:57 and 26:52. I know we're in the age of super shoes. Times don't mean what they used to, but holy crap, is that really fast. Like, if you told me that 3 years ago, 21-year-old American running those times, I'd be like, holy shit. So, yeah, Nico Young's really good.
21-year-old American who got beat by a kid from Harvard at the NCAA Cross Country Championships. Just a dose of reality here. And guys, speaking of the Noah Lyles and Lance Brahman talks, they are now their own separate podcasts. If you didn't hear them last week, so you can listen to those. But let's talk about this 10 some more. I did not see it. You're telling me Luis Grijalva was winning. Well, maybe was leading. Maybe he shouldn't have been, because checking the results here, and he missed getting the standard by 26 seconds, 27:26. 16th place, I guess he was pushing and not even feeling good. But my takeaway is, and maybe talk through this, guys, for some people who didn't see the race. You know, the winner of this race hits the standard, Grant Fisher. He's 26:52.0. Nico Young's 0.68 behind. Andreas Almgren of, I think, Sweden? Was also under 26:53. Mohamed at 26:53. So 8 seconds, though, if you kick, you can make up 8 seconds on the final lap. I was really just curious about how the battle went with the pacing likes went when you guys were confident they were going to have it, because I think that they didn't really get ahead of the whites right until the final lap.
Yeah, how it happened is the paces dropped out. Ahmed Mohamed was one of the paces, and Emon Kemboy was the other. And Ahmed Mohamed did a great job. He got them through at about halfway, 13:31. And after that, the pack kind of let this pace slip a little bit. Like the wave lights got maybe 10 meters ahead of them. And I think I was like, if it gets any bigger, someone is going to have to take it. I was looking at Grant Fisher to do it because, you know, he's the best guy in that race. But it ended up that Mohamed was the first guy to step up, and he led a few laps, and then Habtum Samuel led a few laps, and Weldskut led a few laps. And I was just thinking at that point, I'm like, look, as long as we can see the wave light on the same screen as the runners, they're going to be fine because these guys are all going to be able to kick in like 60 flat or faster the last lap. By the time 800 to go, they were like right with the lights. I'm like, all right, they're definitely going to run ahead of it. At that point, I knew it was a question of how many guys get under, not are we going to see sub 27s. But I am kind of curious why Robert was freaking out so much, because Robert always says when we watch these kind of races, like, you can make up so much time on the last lap. Did you just kind of forget about that momentarily, Robert? Or was it seeing the actual representation of the standard moving further away from the that freaked you out? What were you thinking?
It's easy to remain calm, John, when you don't have money on the line. That's what I was thinking. Look, I just did the math. With three laps to go, they were 3.3 seconds behind 27 flat pace. Yeah, I've always said you can pick up 10 seconds in the last lap. Like you'll be running 28-20 pace and you'll run 28-10. I mean, but they picked up, let's see what the next to last lap was.
61.
Yeah, so, and then right there, they were even with the lap. Then you knew they were going to do it. And they run 56 and they beat it by a lot. And Johnny Kellogg, what's 27 flat pace for the whole way per lap?
64.8. Yeah. I just picked that up. And also, for the record, I'm a 27-minute guy with super shoes. It doesn't sound that hard. 65 seconds for 25 laps? I was running 68 seconds. I guess they don't have... Well, if I could run cheater shoes on the track, Nico probably would have beat me in this race. That's just all I'm going to say. 50-50, as Bekele would say.
But the ultimate vindication for me. I feel like I even coached Nico to this. Mike Smith, do we really think Mike Smith was debating not running him in this race, or was he just trying to act like the guru?
Well, I think if Nico came to him on Monday when they get back in Flagstaff and says, hey, you know that knee injury I had this winter? It's bothering me again, and I feel really tired from that double at NCAAs. I think if that was the case, yeah, he would have pulled him from the race, but they did a workout in between, and that went fine, and Nico said he recovered fine. And at that point, I think you got to go for it. We all said this is it's a little bit of a risk, but it's a risk worth taking. Now he's going into the Olympic trials in great position, and he can really just focus on that. I mean, what do you do if you're Mike Smith? What do you do with him for the rest of the outdoor season? Like, I would not have him run two events of the NCAA meet. I'll tell you that. I would have him barely race at all, honestly. Like, this could be his best chance to make an Olympic team. You just never know. He's in amazing shape. That has to be the priority. He's already got his NCAA titles. Like, maybe throw him in a 5K just to get a qualifier for regionals. He can do it at his conference meet. Like, you got to be very judicious about what you do the next few months because he's in such a good place. And I guess my question is, can he hold it through June? You know, he ran a full cross-country season, wasn't operating at the same level as he was when he came back for the indoor track season. He's had this brilliant indoor track season, but college guys are always a little fitter than the pros because, you know, they've got these championships to go this time of year. So do you guys think he can keep this shape, keep it going until June? Because he's probably going to have to if he wants to make the team.
Yes. He's got plenty of time. He can do base phase for 2 to 3 months. And I'm the biggest proponent of running in college as anybody. Like, if my child, I think it's more likely to be Walton's daughter, if she's got the opportunity to go pro out of high school, I will beg her to run in college. I think being on a team is really special. But at some level, unless your family's got millions in the bank, it's like financial mismanagement not to go pro. And I think Nico Young's at that stage right now. Like, I'm all for rewarding the coach. And if you had a cross country title to go after, go for it. But, and maybe you can get the NIL or get it. You know, one thing I don't understand is since it's just a cash free for all. If I was Nico Young's parents or agents, he would not run another step for NAU unless he had millions of dollars guaranteed coming to him. And I'm fine with him signing a full out endorsement deal with Adidas and not announcing it, or whoever it is, and not announcing it until the season's over. But like, at this point, he's never going to be higher. Like, what is winning a couple outdoor titles going to do? It's not going to do anything. The guy's got to go pro now.
What do you think, Weldon? Should he just turn pro now, or do you finish out the collegiate season with NAU?
I mean, these guys, he could very much have an NIL. Like, I don't know if you could have an NIL. I don't know if technically they're allowed to roll over, but like first refusal or something like that. Like, I assume he's not running for free the rest of the year. However that's done. But I think it's less important these days that you have to leave immediately. I think there's ways people are structuring it that they're going to get paid. I guess, you know, in the free case of an injury or something like that, how would you take care of that? Like, can you do a deal that goes beyond? I mean, NCAAs, I don't think you can, but maybe you can. It sounds like all the rules have sort of gone out the wayside very recently. So why should there be limits on how long the deal is?
Well, the rules right now are that your NIL expires when your collegiate eligibility expires. So he can't sign a contract with a pro sponsor and still compete for NCAA, for NAU. Like, he can't sign a full blown contract. That would have to come officially after either he declares I'm out of eligibility, I'm not running anymore, I'm turning pro, or after NCAA's. I mean, the same thing, because he still does have eligibility remaining after NCAA's.
That's false. Of course he can. I mean, it's a violation of NCAA rules. It's not against U.S. law.
Well, okay, yeah.
Endorsement deal. So if I was him, I wouldn't tell Mike Smith. I wouldn't tell anybody. I'd sign the deal for several million dollars and then maybe run the 5K at national.
Oh, and you got to get the shoe company to go along with that and risk breaking NCAA rules.
It only builds his brand to be more of an NCAA legend. If I was a shoe company, I would encourage him to be a team player and do one more final thing for NAU. But look, he needs to be set. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But the stuff I've been hearing about the NCAA is wild nowadays. I thought the NIL wasn't that much money for guys. It was like $25,000. Now it sounds to me, from talking to some other coaches, some of these guys are making six figures. The corruption. I don't know, man. Like, somebody was like, do you miss coaching? I said, I miss the kids. It's fun to coach. But I don't think I'd like the recruiting. And one of these coaches is like, oh, man, it's gotten so much worse than when you were in it. And apparently, just the bags of cash you have to pay for an athlete's coaches to get them. And I don't even, should I hold this for a dead time? Or I don't want to go on this. I'm going to hold it for a dead time. But this was a top, top, top coach. And he said the amount of doping in the college scene, it was high. And I was like, what? So that's all I'm saying. No, we were not talking about Nico Young. So
all right.
I would bet my life Nico Young's clean. Anyways, well, what does this mean for Nico Young's Olympic odds, John? This is the note you have. Nico Young, Grant Fisher, and Woody Kincaid are the only Americans with the 10K standard. The Road to Paris list is not updated, but I've done the math in my head for the non-qualifiers. Joe Klecker is going to improve his ranking because he's run 27.07 or 27.09. He should be the top ranked person in the world who doesn't have the standard. That's the good news. The bad news is 17 guys have the standard. 8 may be going with cross country. Now it's only 8 and it's only the top 8. If they decline it, they don't go to number 9. So that would put you at 25. So they'd have 2 spots based on ranking. Actually 3 if you took out one of the Americans. So I don't see 2 or 3 people passing him. Well, between now and then. So basically the way I view it is, at most, we're going to have 4 people battling it out for 3 spots in the Olympics for the U.S. men.
Okay. I was looking, Sean McGordy did make the team last year, but his ranking is only 98th right now. He really needs to run a fast 10K. And the fact that he wasn't in this 10K is a little concerning to me, because this is kind of the place to get it done.
But big picture wise, it's disappointing to me that World Athletics does not do what they did for the trials. We've got 4. We're going to be sending 3. Why do they care what 3 we're going to do? It would make the trials much more dramatic if anyone who beats these guys goes. Now, do I think anybody
Well, I could see Abdi Noor beating one of these guys in a tactical race, maybe, or McGordy. So it would be better if everybody in the start line had a shot at the Olympics instead of, oh, you don't have the standard, you don't get to go, even though you beat somebody, you know, 5 weeks out from the Olympics.
All right. But I want to talk a little specific, like, scenario, though. We fast forward to the trials. Think about the guys who are in the race and who could beat Nico Young. Who could, like, how do we see this race shaping up? Because we're not going to see many other fast 10Ks before now and then. The way I see it, I think Grantfish is essentially a lock for the team. But then the other spots, you know, it's going to be interesting. Nico Young ran 26:52. He's in amazing shape. But right now, I think I'm probably more confident in Woody Kincaid making that team. Because this isn't going to be a 26:52 race of the trials. It's going to be a bit slower. I know Woody Kincaid can kick. His trajectory is really good. Because he was only running 13:15 indoors. He's just like, you know, I got to get in shape. He got in shape. Took him a couple months, but he just ran a PB, 26:57. So he's got the standard. I just don't see three guys out kicking him in an Olympic trials. So Woody, I feel very confident about. And then I guess my question is, like, can Nico Young hold his fitness? Can Klecker continue improving? Because again, Klecker, he had some issues indoors, his illness, little injury. He said going into the 10, he'd only run 30 miles the last couple weeks. Going into the 10. So that's still a concern. He does have to get healthy, but if he can run 27:09, he makes teams usually as well. I think those guys are all in the mix. Paul Chelimo was fifth last year at the USA's, coming back from the marathon. Could he factor in? And then McGordy, you can't discount him, but he doesn't have the ranking right now. Then the other guy is Abdelhamid Noor, but my guess is Noor would not run the 10K at the trials. If he doesn't have the standard, I would just put all my energy in the 5K. He's made the team in that event the last 2 years. I know he has a bit more gap to recover. But the way I see it, it's probably, I would say, six guys. Fisher, Young, Kincaid, Klecker, Chelimo, and McGordy. But McGordy needs points. But, like, do you have Young as one of those top three? Like, if you had to pick the team right now, do you think Nico Young's on it?
Yes, I would pick him over Klecker, but I don't think it. I'm not even confident Fisher's a lock. It's a competitive team. It's a tactical race, which plays into Kincaid's sick kick. Klecker has outkicked Fisher for the title before. And Klecker's also run like 12:52 indoors, which is faster than Nico. So I think Nico's got more speed than Klecker. I think he's a better runner than Klecker ultimately, and a bigger talent level. But that's what makes it fun. And the more that could be in it, the better. Like, it's kind of absurd to me. Okay, I know Luis Grau was not an American, but he's been living here for 20 years. Let's say he was an American citizen. He outkicks everybody. He wins the trials, and he can't go to the Olympics, even though he's fourth in the world in the 5,000, but he's not fast enough to go to the Olympics in the 10,000. Like, you know, I understand why World Athletics has some standards, but I really think that the it should go to the country, and then the country, if they have a trials race, it should be a free-for-all. It would just make it much more entertaining. You know,
100%. It's not even that hard to fix. And so I think it should be off ranking. But in this case, we have three Americans with the standard. If they get beat in a trials race, they should lose their spot and should go to whoever beats them. Makes the sport better off. But don't count on that happening. There's probably going to be max of six guys at the trials that it even matters for. Everyone else, You're deluding yourself. You're deluding your family. I guess you could, in theory, go try to hit a road race afterwards. I mean, I don't know. I think some guys will go the road race. I mean, John, is Chelimo, is he going to have the points in the
Chelimo
gym?
Chelimo is actually pretty well positioned right now. He's 31st by world ranking. And those are based off of the night of the 10,000 meter PBs from last year and USA's from last year. So he could go run a road race. Or even right now, like, you know, 31st could get in, depending on who scratches. I think he'd need to shore up his ranking to be sure, but he could be in the mix, certainly.
Drew Hunter?
That was his 10K debut, so he's only got one performance, and it wasn't close to the standard, so no.
I'm surprised you guys didn't say anything. Do you guys even say anything in the recap? Somehow I just now clicked on the results. I saw Drew Hunter. This just shows how much the sport has changed. This guy used to be the future, you know, possibly Adidas dropped a lot of money on him thinking he would be maybe a Nico Young type guy or something like that. He won the B heat quite convincingly, 27-38. And that used to lock you up, put you in the standard, make you a contender. Now it's like you're 40 seconds behind and good luck. But I mean, kudos for Drew for sticking with it. I think, you know, he's probably still under contract for Adidas, at least through this year.
No, it's a good run for Drew. And yeah, well, it used to be if your PBs were 334 and 2738, which is what Drew has run, you'd be like, man, look at that guy's range. And he's a serious contender to make the team, but it's 2024. Shoes have inflated times, and 2738, again, it's 38 seconds off the Olympic stand. So I think this is a great run for Drew, but I'm not even sure Drew views himself as a 10K runner. I was listening to his post-race interview. It was either with FloTrack or Sidious, and he was just saying, yeah, you know, I need to build up my strength. This was a good sign, but he wasn't saying, like, I'm running the 10K at the trials. And for him, again, he doesn't really have the ranking to go. Probably doesn't make sense for him to run the 10K at the trials. But this, I was impressed by his run, but it's just the goalposts have shifted in this event.
I have figured out the solution for Drew Hunter.
Steeplechase?
Yes, John. There was actually a C heat in this, won by a guy named Simon Sundström of Sweden. And you know what Simon Sundström will be doing this summer? He'll be at the Olympics. He's an 8:18 steepler. If Drew Hunter has any coordination, he should just give the steeple a go. Am I missing something here?
I guess my logical response to this would be, why shouldn't every, like, if Drew Hunter should move to the steeple because that's his best chance of making an Olympic team, like, are there about a dozen other Americans? Like, Weldon, would you recommend this course of action to Cooper Tier? Or, you know, are there other people out there you just think should move to the steeple because they're good but not quite good enough to make it in their chosen event?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you're afraid. I never considered it. Why wasn't every mediocre runner in college be lined up outside of the steeple chase pit? Because I think we're cowards and we know we couldn't do it.
Right. It's hypothetically, it's, oh yeah, this guy, he's talented enough to run an 8:18 steeple. And then we see people try to run an 8:18 steeple and they don't come close. Some of them do, but I feel like it's more the exception than the rule.
Please. Speaking of the steeple, I recently received a text from Supporters Club member and top U.S. steepler. I didn't know how to say his last name, Don. Dan Michalski?
Michalski. I was wondering, I was like, Robert's not even going to say his name because he can't pronounce the last name correctly. Fourth placer at the last Olympic trials, by the way, Dan Michalski.
And a lock for this team. He's now joined the Air Force WCAP. He listens to the pod religiously. Got a wife and kids. There's no chance this guy doesn't make the team. We were talking a few weeks ago about Leonard Carrier and whether he could get an appearance fee. He's texted in for the marathon. Army WCAP guys like Leonard Clear are not eligible for appearance fees, but they are eligible for prize money. Sadly, Air Force WCAP athletes are not supposed to accept either. For some reason, he doesn't understand.
I don't understand why you wouldn't get prize money.
Now, guys, you don't want to jeopardize your military pension, but it's like Drew Hunter. Just are they really checking your bank accounts? Just take that appearance fee. Have your agent take it and then just have them give it to you in cash. Put it underneath the belt. I think you probably don't want cash on the military base. Anyways, Dan, hope the training's going well.
Okay, so that's like the American side from the 10.
No, it's not. No, yeah. It's not. John Galt has a note in here saying Grant Fisher's new coaching setup appears to be working. Really? That's the conclusion after the indoor season? That's not the conclusion for me. Like, look, I've always thought, you know, if you can coach, you can coach. You don't have to have done it for years. You know, look at, you know, just because Drew Grant's current coach was his high school coach and hasn't coached a lot of pros doesn't mean he's not a great coach. And just because Hokie NAZ Elite hired a guy no one had heard of doesn't mean he can't coach. And he's proving us correct. The guy's doing an amazing job. And
Rojo, can you remember his name?
No, I cannot.
Jack Mullaney.
I was talking to the top college coach the other day, and he's like, yeah, what's that guy's name? I'm like, yeah, I knew a Jack then. I forgot it. You know, by the way, Laura Rogers, Under Armour here in Baltimore, is doing a nice job. She's doing a nice job with the women. I don't even know Well, is it Corey Lysy that coaches the men? Hey, Corey, if you want to retire, I'm happy to coach the men's Under Armour team here in Baltimore.
Well, can I respond to this Grant Fisher thing? I said it's working. I didn't say, like, this solves everything. Grant Fisher was already really good last year. Jerry Schumacher deserves a lot of credit for his development. And I think generally it's kind of hard for a coach to actually have a large impact in just a few months, but it's going fine. Like, he hasn't, you know, this was a pretty good indoor season for Grant Fisher. He ran 8:03 for 2 miles and only lost because the guy in front of him broke the world record. Like, if Josh Kerr wasn't in that race, our takeaway would be, wow, Grant Fisher almost broke the world record for 2 miles. He ran 12:51 basically solo for a 5K in Boston, and then he wins the 10 in 26:52. That's an A. That's a good indoor season. He's positioned himself well. He's done what he needs to do to hit all the standards, and now he gets to go for the Olympic trial. So I'm saying it's working. He seems to be in a good place.
Of course, John. Anyone who says anything differently than that is just being difficult. Like, he can't argue that it's not working. This was a great indoor season, a great race for Grant Fisher here. Like, let's not waste our time, please.
Let me play devil's advocate again, since that's my role on this podcast. It was a good indoor season. I think it's going well. He's happy, which is very important. But can we act like 26? We don't have to act like 26:52 for a 26:33 guy is amazing. And maybe it's because I was worried about the money, but I expected this guy just to toe this field, stick on that line for the entire second half, and then, you know, run 26:48 or something. And it didn't happen. And it makes me a little bit worried. Look, if I was him in the trials, to be honest, I might just do what these guys did here. And if no one else has the standards, four guys for three spots, you could just wait to the last lap. The odds of you getting outkicked by all three of the other guys there are not very good. So you make the team. But if he wants to, you know, when he waited a couple of years ago, Kincaid blew his doors off in the last 200. As Jerry Schumacher said, everybody's feeling good when it's slow, 200 meters to go. So I would assume he would want to ratchet down the pace from 1,200 meters out or something like that. And I saw no indication that he's ready to do that right now.
Well, it's interesting, Robert, because someone on the message boards started a thread. Am I alone in thinking that Grant Fisher will win the 2024 Olympic 10,000 meters? And I was just like, okay, he had a good indoor season. That's not really my takeaway. Like, if he had totally blasted out, he did pull away and win this race in the end, but it's, you know, he ran a 56 last lap. It's not like he totally blasted anyone. That wasn't my takeaway. But then there was another great post here, because people, it's going to come down to, like, is he going to be able to kick with the likes of Barrega and Kiplimo and Cheptegei and maybe Kajelcha, the guys who are going to be there in the last lap of the Olympic final? Can he run at 53 and get a medal? He almost did that in Eugene. He was a little further back in Tokyo. I think he's probably going to be better positioned than either of those, but I don't view Grant Fisher as like a huge kicker. I think his kick's good enough to get a medal. I'm still not convinced it's good enough to win the gold medal. And someone here, realistic view on his kick, posted a nice kind of summary here. He said, Grant Fisher's issue is he's really good at running 55, 56 second last laps in both fast and slow races, but faster than that, and he gets out positioned and out kicked. He says, to go really far back, he was always good at out kicking his high school peers off being fitter and more talented. Brooks PR 2 miles his senior year, he closed in 55, had no answer for Drew Hunter's 54. NCAAs, he won an outdoor 5K title, but it wasn't a historically strong year. He only needed a 55 to win. He consistently lost to Morgan McDonald his senior year in NCAA races when they were closing in 52 to 54, but he beat him in the one fast time trial 3K they won in Millrose. He lost the Olympic trials 10K to Woody when he closed in 53 to Grant Fisher's 54, lost the Olympic trials 5K to Paul Chelimo, both of them running 52. 2022, he was 26:33 shape. He lost the US 10K champs to Klicker. He had to be paced by Evan Jaeger to win the 5K. At USA's that year. And then his takeaway is, I don't say any of this to put Grant Fisher down. He's probably the fastest pure distance runner the US has ever had and has had an incredible career. We've never had a 7:25, 12:46, 26:33 guy before. But in a race where multiple guys are closing under 55, he's never had the positioning or gears to win. His only chance is a sub 26.50 race where a 55 or a 56 would be enough. But even then, Cheptegei is probably marginally better. I think Grant will finish third to fifth in the Olympic 10K as he's a strong and consistent runner. I mean, I think that sums things up perfectly. Grant Fisher, he's one of the best the U.S. has ever had in distance races on the Diamond League circuit because he's able to, he's strong enough to stay there and he's strong enough. He's also fast enough to kick well enough to contend and finish in the top three in Diamond Leagues. I haven't seen yet that he has the gears at the end to win an Olympic gold medal or to win a world title, but I think he's strong enough that he's always going to be in the mix, and I think he's going to be kicking for a medal. The question is, like, is he going to be able to close in like 52 high and get gold or silver, or is he going to be 53 or 54 and he's battling for bronze?
His best bet is to do what he did in this race. Do zero work, sit on the rail, and kick for the bronze.
You don't think he should go for the win?
Go for the win? No. When has he won a Diamond League? I mean, ideally you'd like to win, but this guy, look, you let the Africans wear themselves out in the Diamond League circuit, chasing a paycheck, trying to get on their teams because they have some antiquated qualifying system. Let them run World Cross. Let them do this, you know, and then just hope you get a little bit lucky and they're off their game. Like, he's an incredible, credible runner, but is he Cheptegei? No. Is he Caplimo? No. So that's two guys. Now, Kenya seems to be down a little bit.
John, you're asking if he should try to win the Olympics?
Well, so Robert's sort of suggesting this is a silly idea. This is a guy, he was fourth at the last World Championships he ran. What is that? I don't think it's crazy. I mean, I guess, is it marginal? Is the strategy all that different? I guess it kind of depends on the race. But, like, if you're fourth at the bell, you can, if you're in position to kick, you just run as fast as you can and you try to get as high as possible. Is it a difference between running? Sometimes there are strategic differences in the race. You've got to hang back a little bit more. But I feel like when we talk about kicking for bronze or something, it happens more in a 1500 than a 5K or a 10K.
I don't think it changes that much. He basically should follow the Jordi Bemis strategy. Do no work and then let it rip and see what it gets you. And let these other guys who are obsessed about winning, if Cheptegei doesn't win, it's a disaster for him, et cetera. They'll be surging in the middle of the race, trying to break the field when, you know, I mean, we saw it last year on the women's side. I don't remember the men's race, but there was like five girls there. Monson was right there. Take your chances.
It seems preposterous to me, John, that he should think about winning. But he's been fourth, right?
Yeah.
And if you're getting fourth, you should probably think about winning. Anyone ever remember Galen Rupp in 2012?
Yeah. Damn near won the race.
I still contend he wasn't thinking of winning that race. And if he had, he might have had it. But what had he done before that race? His best finish at a World Championships, I think, was eighth place before that. He had never been where Grant Fisher is. Comes on, puts it all together that year, walks away with a silver medal. So there's something for believing you can win the race and running like you can do it. I think you put yourself at slightly better position, you know, at the bell, that sort of stuff. You're like, oh, I'm fine. I can get a bronze from this position. That's probably all you're going to get. And it may cost you in the chance to get the bronze. But, you know, occasionally you do have everybody battle for the win and some guy pips third, so.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the race dynamics. All right.
I mean, to his credit, he threw 2022 Worlds outdoors. I mean, look at these names. Cheptegei, 27-27-43. Waithika of Kenya, Stanley Mimburu, 27-27-90. Caplimo, 20-27-97. Fisher, 27-28.14. He beat Barrega. He beat Ahmed. He beat Aragawi. He beat some absolute stars of the sport. And, you know, he was 0.17 away from the thing. He was actually less than a second from the goal. So, yeah, I mean, dream of the goal. But I think if he's third, he's going to be thrilled. Second, too. And, you know, I mean, on the one hand, I'm poo-pooing him running 20 seconds off his standard. On the other hand, Cheptegei basically ran the same time on the roads this weekend. I don't think he was necessarily trying to run faster than that. Just wanted to pick up the standard. But
this is the thing with both of them, Robert. Grant Fisher won the race and hit the standard easily in the end. He wasn't going in trying to treat this as an American record attempt. He came through in 13:31. He was just get the standard, check the box, take, you know, waste as little energy as possible and getting it. That was his race strategy. Mission accomplished on all fronts. I don't care that he didn't run 26:40 and make it look easier. He won the race. He's made his one move, which was take the lead with 100 meters to go. He did it. He pulled away. He won. That's fine. Same with Cheptegei. Cheptegei's got World Cross coming up next weekend. I think in this race, Yomif Kejelcha in Laredo was coming in with the idea, I want to try to break the world record. He came up a little short, ran 26:37, still a good run for him. Whereas Cheptegei, I think, is like, knock out the standard, make sure I've checked this box, and that can focus on my bigger goals. So I think both of them did exactly what they needed to this weekend. The other thing, the 10, we don't need to spend time breaking down every single other guy. We're almost like 45 minutes in, and we've really only talked about the men's race. But I just want to say, Andres Almgren, really impressive. This guy was a 145 800 guy, bronze medalist at World Juniors in the 800 in 2014. 10 years later, he's doing double threshold training, and he's run 26:52 and 59:23 and a half. That's pretty amazing. Mohamed, there's what Mohamed does. He always shows up, you know. He's going to make another Olympic team. He'll be in the top seven or so in Paris. Habtum Samuel, first year in the NCAA. This guy's running 26:53. I know he's very accomplished beforehand. He'd run like 27:20. He'd made worlds for Eritrea. But, I mean, that's, you know, we've got a guy, the second best guy in the NCAA right now. I think his best finish was only like fourth or something in NCAA indoors. He was the NCAA cross runner-up. It's kind of wild. There's a 26:53 guy in the NCAA, and he's not even the best guy right now. And then props to Adrian Weltskut and Edwin Kurgat. These guys were both talents when they were in the NCAA. Weltskut was NCAA runner-up in cross-country. Edwin Kurgat was an NCAA champion in cross-country. They're both out at Flagstaff. And they've just kept getting better. Like, they're doing really well right now. Weltskut has run 12:56 and 26:55 this indoor season with Hoka NAC Elite. Kurgat's run 12:57 and 26:57 for Under Armour Dark Sky distance. I'm just impressed that they've continued to be able to, because we see guys run in the NCAA and then they just, that's their peak. They never get better. And both of these guys have been out of the NCAA system for a couple of years now and are still improving. So I think credit to them, credit to their coaching setups.
All right. In the women's race, I don't know, John, when we were watching it, it was kind of disappointing, right? It was kind of chaotic, Weldon. I don't know if you got this like in the recap. Like, the race goes off and it's just immediately there's two races. There's Monson and the world cross country silver medalist Sige Gebrselama of Ethiopia out front. And then there's this pack way back that was supposedly running for 30-40 pace, but nobody was running 30-40 pace. So it was kind of like disappointing. And then the live splits weren't working and it's hard to like, broadcast. They had split screens, but it's hard to see what's going on. And then Monson like falls off like before halfway. She was having a stomach virus. And then Gebrselama did get the first sub 30 on US soil. But she already had the standard. I feel like she must have been brought in just basically to pace Monson. Did y'all get that impression? I will give credit to Ritz. They're both on athletes. I saw Ritz go up to her, the Ethiopian, and give her a hug afterwards. But, you know, she'd already run like, what, 65 minutes and a half? So her breaking 30 was not a shock for me.
Well, it could have been that, or it could have been she needs to get a fast 10K time so that she has a chance to make the Ethiopian team if they're going off 10. So who knows? But yeah, she is an unsponsored athlete. Yeah, Robert, I was with you. I was watching this race and midway through, I'm like, this is chaotic, and I'm here for it, actually, because these standard time trials, most of them, like, you know, the men's race, I guess there was a little drama when they stopped falling behind pace a little bit, but it's like, things didn't get good until a lap to go. This one, I'm like, what the hell's going on? These people aren't doing what I thought they were going to do. Monson's falling off. This thing's going turning into a disaster. Obviously, it was very bad timing for her that she had this stomach issue on the night of the race she'd built her whole winter around, so you hate to see someone's, you know, lost 6 months of training kind of just get derailed because of that. But, you know, watching this everything unfold, I'm like, what the hell's going on. It was hard to sort out, but it also made it interesting as a viewer. So yeah, Gebre Selama ends up just soloing this thing for most of the way. Runs a great time. Wayne Kaladi was one of the few people who kind of noticed, okay, the second group is not going for the time, so I'm just going to run ahead of it. And she gets ahead of the wave light for most of the time, which I thought was kind of interesting. Ends up running 30-33. Big PB, gets the Olympic standard. Lauren Ryan of Australia and Megan Keith, who is a 21-year-old Brit, they were also running with her for bits and pieces. And they sort of, I think one of them might have been ahead of her at times. I don't remember exactly how it unfolds. And then the second group of Americans who, you know, we think are going for this 30-40 standard, it's just not feasible for them. And they end up running a little over 31 minutes. You have Rachel Smith, 31.04. Carissa Schweizer, 31.04. Kira D'Amato, 31.05. Ellie Hennis, 31.07. That just reminds me, like, what you said on the men's side, 27 flat, very fast. 30-40, it's very fast. Going into this race, I think only five American women had ever run that fast. You know, it's just, it is hard to hit that pace. I think they all kind of realized without a pacemaker leading us right there, they couldn't do it. They're not fit enough to do it right now.
Okay, I'm a little confused what you guys are saying. Gebre Selama and Monson went for sub 30, which we expected a couple people to be doing. And then Kaladi, Ryan, and Keith all dipped under 30-40 by 7 seconds. It sounds like they were running the 30-40 pace and got under. And then everyone else couldn't make it. So, like, what am I missing?
Because there was a second. Initially, they were part of a second group that included, like, Rachel Smith, Schweizer, D'Amato, and they were going to, that whole group was targeting 30-40. But then that whole group starts to let the wave lights get away from them, the 30-40 lights. So Kaladi then bridges the gap and then is running ahead of the lights. So instead of just sticking right on the 30-40 lights, she was running ahead of it with some other women. Then there was this other group that was supposed to be targeting 30-40 that was running way behind the lights. So maybe you just had to see it, Rob Weldon, but it did feel chaotic.
John's somewhat lying. The other group never went for 30-40. I don't think they ever planned on going for 30-40. Right at the beginning, Weldon, nobody was going for 30-40 except for Kaladi. And then, you know, the Americans were behind that. And then, you know, Ryan and Keith of it was interesting to me. Kaladi was ahead of the lights. And then at one point, I think she got caught by the lights, maybe even followed behind them. And then she rallied when she got caught by these other people. So I was afraid that there was only going to be one person get the standard. Instead, there ended up being four, but we don't need to replay it.
I mean, the one thing, my takeaway from this, obviously, good run for Gebre Selama, good run for Kaladi. I'm not concerned about, I mean, Monson just clearly was not herself, and she left the track, and I'm just like, look, this wasn't Alicia Monson. You know, something was up with her. It's the stomach thing. So I don't really, I'm not going to hold this against her or anything. She just, everyone has a bad race, and there was something out of her control. The women I was kind of paying attention to is like, all right, what does this mean for other people getting an Olympic spot? And the winner for me, I know she wasn't close to the standard, but based on what she said on her Instagram after the race, it was Carissa Schweizer, because this is a woman who had surgery on her Hagelands deformity, you know, Achilles surgery essentially in October, still working her way back into shape. It's March. She runs 31.04. And this was her comment. She said, although getting the Olympic standard in my first race back post-surgery was a big goal, I still came into the weekend with the full belief that I could. This is just the start. I'm really excited about where I'm at right now. And even more importantly, happy that I'm back running healthy again. So that, I mean, maybe I'm getting carried away like Rojo was with that Instagram comment by Kira D'Amato before the Olympic trials, but this woman's incredibly talented. She's run 30-18. I think she has time to make up this gap, you know, and get up there by the trials. I also don't think she's going to have to contend with Elise Cranny. Sounds like Cranny is leaning more towards the 1500 5K this year, and she wasn't in this race. So, you know, she wasn't trying to get the standard. I feel pretty good about Carissa Schweizer coming off of this, and the fact that she has run 31.04 after surgery in October, I think she's in a pretty good trajectory.
And I feel good about Kira D'Amato, who ran 31.05. That gave me hope that she could run 30-40. She's a great road runner. She's only 25 seconds off. She's coming back from the marathon. Like, I kind of thought her Olympic dream was dead, but if I was her, I'm trying to find the best 10. Is there a fast 10,000? We know there's going to be a lot of people on it. Put on the pogo shoes and see what happens.
That's what she's doing, Robert. It might be a road race. It might just be another 10,000 PB, something like that. But she talked to FloTrack afterwards and basically said going into this race, she wasn't sure what the rest of her season was going to look like. You know, it was kind of dependent on how she ran. She said she felt she ran well. I agree. 31:05, just coming back from the trials. So that means, she said now, her goal between now and the trials, find a fast 10K, get the standard, and put herself in position to make the team. It would be pretty amazing story. The age of 39, she misses out on the Olympics and the marathon, and then comes down to the track, runs the 10,000, and makes it. But she is a contender. This was a good run for her.
So right now we have two Americans with the standard. I think Schweizer definitely can get it. Maybe D'Amato. And then I think this race was a great race for Katie Izzo. The American right now, she's got the cross-country ranking. The fewer women that get the standard, the better for her. So she's going to have to beat probably somebody, get lucky at the trials. I don't see it happening, but she's got a shot.
I mean, I think Katie Izzo, the only way she gets in is if no Americans. I think she's going to get beat by a number of women at the trials. I think the only way she gets in is if the third or fourth or fifth American is not in position to go based on world ranking, or they don't have the standard. Like, Katie Izzo, last year at USA's, she was 15th in the 5,000 meters. Her PBs are 15, 16, and 32.22. I mean, which from last year, her 10K PB, she ran 32.22 at the 10. She ran a few cross-country races this winter in Europe. They went pretty well, but those were shallow fields. I just don't think she's at the level of Schweizer or D'Amato or some of these other women.
Good to see Ellie Hennis back after her lung problems. But what about the men's 1500? Women's 1500, high schooler Sadie Englehart moves to number 5 all time on the U.S. high school list, 409. That's pretty good, although John pointed out the top 4 on the list have never run faster than high school PBs. By the way, I put in the week that was, check in the show notes, number 6 through 9 on the high school list have all run faster than the high school PB. So we're not saying she's knocking the PB, but we always do warn people not to celebrate teenage distance girls until they're like 19.
I mean, that stat is absolutely amazing, John. When I saw it, I couldn't believe it. The 4 fastest American high schoolers have never beaten their PBs in 1500. Is that the stat?
Yeah.
Am I saying that right? And that's just absolutely astounding. Like, we say, oh, there's, you never know what's going to happen. A lot of, you know, phenoms turn out pretty good, but it's just a total cautionary tale. Like, one, just enjoy it while you're in the process. You know, you can go to college wherever you want. Maybe now you can get paid a little money as well. So, like, take it. You know, the future's not guaranteed. There's no guarantee you can be on the Olympics, anything like that. You're one of the best American high school runners ever. Enjoy that part of it.
So, by the way, I should say one other thing about the 10,000. Megan Keith, who's Parker Valby's age, 21, 30-36 for Britain. Pretty remarkable. I mean, 2021, or 5,000 people, 16:08. 2022, it's 15:53. Now she's run 14:56 and 30:36, which is wild. And if you actually look at what she was doing on the roads, this is great for D'Amato and people like that, because January 14th, she only ran 31:22 in Valencia. A week later, she ran 31:48. Now she runs 30:36. So anyways, women's 1500, good for the high schooler. For the men, Kieran Tuntavet, ex-Harvard runner, will set a tie record and won it. And I don't even know what the time was. 336?
337.58.
But I was watching Matthew Centrowitz, the 2016 Olympic champion. He's announced this week, this is his last year. My eyes were glued on him. John had talked to Evan Jaeger for another article that he's working on. John told me before the race, he's like, look, Jaeger's just getting a race in. You know, it didn't sound like he's expecting much. So Jaeger was only beat 2 people in this race and ran 340. And yeah, I'd like him to be in better shape if I thought he was going to be a medal contender, but I think it's the fact that he's healthy enough and he's in the steeple, he still has a shot at the Olympic team. Centrowitz ran 3:38. He was mid-pack throughout. I don't know. Before the race, John, in your preview, what did we come up? We were talking about what do we think a good time would be? And we kind of wanted to see, to be honest, I mean, no one ran this. 3:36 or better, right?
I wanted to see a 3:36 or a 3:37. 3:38 is like middle of the road. I mean, I wasn't going to write off Centro based on any performance because, again, it's March, but I was just kind of interested to see what he felt about the race. When he talked about it afterwards, he was like, look, I'm ahead of where I was last year. And now last year, he only finished 10th at USA's, but you know, this time last year, he ran 3:40. Sorry, he ran 3:40 in May 6th of 2023. And then 2 months later at USA's, he was 10th. So the fact that he's running 3:38 in the middle of March, I think he kind of viewed that as a positive, but he's pretty realistic. Like he didn't, you know, he couldn't respond to Tuntavate and Thomas Ratcliffe making this move at the end. And it's not like it was some huge move. They final lap, it's 56.9. Centro closed in 57.7. So he kind of knew he doesn't have it right now, but he needs to have it at the trials. And I think he'll get the most out of himself at the trials. The question is like, you know, can he get down to 3:32 shape or something? Because there are going to be three or four other Americans who are going to be in that kind of shape. And if it's a fast race, that's the minimum you need to be competitive, essentially. You're going to need to be able to run like 3:33 as 3:34 or something, maybe. But you also, you know, you need to have that kick if it's a slower race. So, yeah, I don't know. I would say so-so for Centro, but he's in a better position than he was last year.
I will say, you know, watching him run, he's still a beautiful runner. He's so smooth. But when you're getting outkicked by 5,000 and 10,000 meter runners, it's not great. By the way, I haven't looked up his ranking, but how rich would it be? This would suck for the fans, but I would like to do this just to kind of stick it to World Athletics. I mean, I don't know what the solution is. I was in charge of World Athletics. I don't know how, well, I know what the solution would be. If a country had three spots and they had the trials, that's it. But how amazing or how sad would it be? But perfect. Would it be for our sport if Matthew Centrowitz, the 2016 Olympic champion, has an amazing race, finishes top threes at the trials, and then doesn't get to go because he doesn't have the standard or the world ranking to go?
God, that would be such a tragedy.
I mean, you guys aren't impressed by this, but it's better than I thought he'd do, or maybe in line. I thought anything under 3:40, I'm like, well, the party can keep going. I think it's going to end with a big hangover at the Olympic trials. I don't see how in the hell he makes this team at all, but from what we've seen in recent years, this time of year, it's better than I thought he would do.
I wasn't impressed, but I wasn't expecting to be impressed. My big thing is like, as long as he's not running like 3:45, you know, but he's, again, this is a guy, I think he will get a lot fitter the next couple of months. The question is, can he get to the level of fitness to be contending with the likes of Neguse, Kessler, and Hawker? I think that's going to be very tough, but I don't think it's impossible. Though some on the forums disagree. There was a thread someone started off to this race, Centro needs to retire. And I disagree with that. I think this guy's earned the right to go out on his own terms, and he's got a chance to make the Olympic team. He's a U.S. legend. Like I think sport's more interesting with Centro in it. So I'm glad he's making this one last run. It's a nice storyline to follow. But then there was a sarcastic response. I love this one, and Robert saw it as well, by the guy Quit Giza. And it was like, quote, Centro should give it up. Your goal was like 8 years ago, and you can barely break four these days. Just quit already. You are done. And then in parentheses, he said, posted by a 45-year-old divorced man with a mile best of 4:47 from high school. He also spends 4 hours a day on Let's Run, 2 hours daily on Pornhub, and might break 20 at his local Leprechaun Lap 5K this morning if conditions are right and no walkers get in the way. You gotta love the forums, man.
John, did you see that before I did? I copied and pasted that in the show notes. Like you saw it too.
Oh, I copied and pasted it in the show notes. I saw it because I saw it, and then I saw you commented on it, and because I saw it and I laughed. Like, not every, there are funny. I'm using post on the message board. This one I was actually like laughing at. That's gold. And then when I saw that it had the Rojo seal of approval, I'm like, all right, I got to give this guy a shout out on the podcast. But sometimes it's amusing. Look, people are forums. People speak freely about a lot of topics. Some of them have hot takes on running. And some of those hot takes occasionally age like milk. And this one, Centro should retire. I mean, the guy's not saying, I mean, I just disagree with the premise. But there are some people who are like, Nico Young, Mike Smith has ruined Nico Young. This is when someone started that thread on the day of the NCAA Cross Country Championships in November, like late November. And 3 months later, people are just bumping this thread every time Nico runs something amazing, saying like, you were wrong. But that, you know, it's okay. This, you can throw out the hot takes, and sometimes if they don't age well, people are going to remind you of it. But it's all right. It's okay to have an opinion.
I mean, the premise that Centro may be done isn't a crazy one. This race was, man, like, it's just B level. It's a bunch of 5K guys who aren't good in the 1500. Some guy named Henry McCluckey from the UK. I've been learning a lot about him, John. I knew have a new famous race. He's been racing in the US for some reason. You're British. Have you heard of the Friday Night Under the Lights in Battersea Park in Southwest London?
I've run through Battersea Park a few times. I'm not familiar with the 5K there, but it's a nice place to run.
Everyone go do this. This is the race everyone needs to do. I've said there should be more night races. Why do we have to wake up some god-awful hour early in the morning when, one, there's no stands? Two, like, man, I could never run well in the morning. If we had marathons at night, 10Ks at night, road, oh, man, this is what we need. So I don't know. How often do these run? Well, it looks like his last, maybe once a month, looks like here.
Speaking of legends trying to make the Olympics, United Airlines NYC half was held in New York. Sure if ever anyone's ever won $20,000 in a half marathon for running 69.09. I know it's hilly, but congratulations to Carolyn Grovdahl of Norway. She said the win was equivalent to one of her European titles. He won the women's title. Abel Kipchumba won the men's title in 60.25. But way back in seventh place, only 63.59 was the great Kenenisa Bekele. But Weldon, he apparently was not despondent afterwards. He told you he thinks he has a 50-50 shot of making the Ethiopian Olympic team, which is wild to me. This guy has not been on the Olympic team since 2012. So he just ran 204 at age 40-something in December. 63.59, and we're only, what, how many weeks to London, John?
Like a month out. I mean, 50-50 is absurd. It's lower than that. But I was curious, like, this obviously wasn't a good race, but Bekele didn't, he's like, look, it's slower than I expected, but it is a slow course. I'm not, we've seen him have, like, stinkers, and then he'll somehow come back and run something fast. So I'm not, it's not a good sign. But I'm not like, oh man, he's not going to do anything in London. Like, I think there's still a chance he runs something there. But I was trying to figure out, like, what's his path to the team? How good does he have to run at the London Marathon to make the team? Because he ran 204 in Valencia. That kind of suggested he's, you know, he's in decent shape. Like, what would he have to do? I think there are two guys right now I definitely pick for the Ethiopian Olympic team. Tamarat Tola, who just set the course record in New York. Cisse Lema, who just ran 201 in Valencia. Now, they're both running spring marathons. Who knows? But I was thinking, like, to get that third spot, Bekele, he either has to win London or he has to run really fast in London, like 201 or 202, and or maybe 202, 203, and finish in the top three and only get beaten by Tola or by... No, he can't get beaten by an Ethiopian other than Tola, I would say. Basically, I think those are kind of his two paths. You need to win the race, doesn't matter the time, or you need to run like 201 or 202, show that you're really, really fast, and don't have someone else from a spring marathon leapfrog him. What do you guys think?
Well, God, if he wins London or runs 201 or 202, I think he's a lock for the team.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying, I don't know if how else would, like, if he gets fourth in London in 203, I just don't think you can say, this guy clearly deserves to be in the Olympic marathon team when you've got other guys running faster or winning races.
if he's, I was going to say third in London. I mean, Deseret Galetta, who I've never heard of, doesn't even have a birth date. Till Stopcha. This seems fishy as hell. I figured he was young. This guy just ran, by the way. The only reason I'm mentioning his name is because he won Seville this year in 203.27. I figured he had never run before. He was just new, an upcomer. He's run 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. This was his 15th marathon finish. Up until last year, he'd never broken 207.30. Now he runs 205.51 in Dubai last year. Now he runs 203.27. Times just aren't what they used to be. So yeah, I would say top three and, you know, pretty good time. I don't think he's going to make it. It'd be amazing if he did. I would just love to see him on the start line motivated. And I never have understood why he hasn't done. He's obsessed with time. Like he did New York once or twice, but I always thought he'd be better. Just put him in a race where he's competitive, but he doesn't like those type of races. All right. There was another thing, another road race last week in the UK. I started a thread about it. Josh Kerr and Jakob Ingebrigtsen, watch out. Jake Whiteman has run a 5,000 and he's run a 27-second PB. Some people thought that was a little clickbaity by me. Everything I wrote was factual, John. Now, I'm not sure if Ingebrigtsen and them are quaking because the time was 13:52. His previous PB was 14:19. But apparently the conditions were terrible. It was rainy and windy. Yeah. I was kind of going for clicks, but not in a bad way. To me, if you're running faster than you have before, and that was 5,000 PBs from a long time ago, it's a decent sign. We know he's healthy. This is a 143-800 guy. He's an 8:15 guy. He's not a, you know, 5,000 meter guy. And it's actually interesting to me. It just shows you how talented all these guys are. Way back in the, there was, in the results was Ben Pattison. The 800 meter bronze medalist, and he runs like 14-0. Like, I trained my whole life, can't run 14-0. Some 800 guy hops in a road 5K and just runs 14-0.
Robert, that was my same exact reaction when I saw the Ben Pattison time. I'm like, this guy's a bronze medalist at Worlds. Yeah, he's still probably talented enough. He can just screw around and run, yeah, faster than I ever did in my entire life, training specifically for the 5K and 10K. But yeah, newsflash. It takes an obscene level of talent to medal at the World Championships. As far as Jake's concerned, it's fine. It's not a bad sign, but I still am thinking of those races in Boston in Australia where he's going to the Olympic standard and he's not winning any of them and he's coming up short of the standard. That's sort of, yeah, that's my memory of him more recently, but it's fine. It's a low-key 5K, he ran a small PB. I'm not really taking it one way or another.
All right, we're only days away from the launch of our new site, letsprint.com. Walden's now a sprint expert. We now have a sprinters only forum, apparently, on the message board. And I famously predicted that Noah Lyles would never win an Olympic gold medal. Not because he's not talented, I just thought he missed his time in 2021 and there were some massive talents coming up behind him. The names of Arian Knight and Vasily Tabogo. The second half of my argument appears to still be true. Tabogo this week, I mean, some people were impressed that Noah Lyles split a 45.7, 45.68, I think, at the 4x4 with a running start indoors. Now, I know indoors is slower than outdoors, particularly for the 400, and it was hard to get his legs under his hips or something. But Tabogo has run an open 400 in South Africa this week. He ran 44.29. John wants to know, what does this mean for the Rojo Noah Lyles panic meter? To be honest, this has me panicked. Not that my assumption that Tabogo is a phenom, and in like the next Usain Bolt, I thought if we were going to have the next Bolt, it was going to be Tabogo or Knight. This guy looks like the next coming. But my concern is, damn, he might win the 2 and the 4 instead of the 1 and the 2. So that would still leave the 100 for Noah.
So give me a number. Where are you on the panic meter for Noah Lyles' chances of winning Olympic gold this summer?
Although, wait a minute. I guess I should feel good about myself. Fred Curley still has sick 400-meter talent, right? And he won the 100?
Yeah.
I need, Jabogo, I need you dropping down to the 1 and 2. There's way more money in the 1 and 2 than the 4. I would say right now, based off this, his easiest path to gold would be the 400, which is crazy.
I mean, the guy, he was second in the 100 last year, but at the same time, the 400's kind of in a lull at the moment. And now maybe not Michael Norman and Steven Gardner are healthy this year and come back, but the winning time last year, 44.22 was the winning time in the World Championship final. Now, that's after a few rounds, but again, Tobogo ran 44.29 in March. I think if he trains specifically for it, he's going to be in better, he's going to be in 43 second shape. Also, the way he ran this race, he eased up at the end. He made it look easy. Like, this is one of the easier 44.29s I've ever seen. And I just love how Noah Lyles, he'll run this full indoor season and there'll be hype ahead of every race. And they're on, you know, it's on Peacock in the US, so it's a world championship or US championship. Tobogo, it'll be a random Monday afternoon and we'll just be like, oh yeah, Tobogo ran a 44.2 at this random meet in Pretoria. And the clock, did you guys see the clock for this race? It wasn't one of those things where it's just constantly churning. It would be like a marathon clock where it ticks, it goes 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. There were no tenths or anything. It was just turning over like it's a marathon, except it's a 400. So no, this guy's a freak. We already knew he's a freak sprint talent, but we'll get some this winter. It's kind of shown he's not just a freak in the 100 and 200. He's a freak in the 400 as well. Because remember, a month ago, he ran 30.69, I should say, the world record for the 300 meters. Now he's running 44.29. He's just an absolute freak across all these distances. And I think he stays in the 100, 200 because those are the glory events. It's much more fun to be the Olympic 100 champion. But could he win? If he decided, I want to train for the 400, could he win the Olympics this year? I think probably, yeah.
But if both are training for the 400, maybe he could have done it. He just never wanted to do it. The more I think about it, like, this has been a great week for me. I won $500. Thank you, Nico Young. This is great news for me. This guy won the silver medal of the 100, and this proves that he's probably in the best shape of his life. No one should be scared. I'm going to drop it below now. I'm going to go down to a 6 now.
Okay.
I was going to say 4. I still think the odds are greater than 50% that Noah Lyles wins the gold medal. But we're getting close now because I think this guy might be winning the 200. Although he's better than the 100 last year, so I don't know.
It's just interesting because with him, and even with Knighton, but probably maybe this is a prisoner of the moment thing, I just can't help but think of Bolt. Like, Tyson Gay wins the 100-200 double in Osaka in 2007. Sets him up perfectly for the Olympic year. Now, he got hurt coming into the 2008 Olympics, but he wasn't going to beat Bolt regardless in those games. But the thing is, like, Bolt got the silver medal in Osaka, and people are like, this guy is really the next, you know, super freak talent, because he was only, I think he had only just turned 21 when he did that in Osaka. And I can't help but think that Tobogo, who only turned 20 last summer when he got the silver in the 100 and the bronze in the 200, that as good as Lyles is, like, could Lyles just be usurped by a freakazoid talent like Tobogo? Maybe. I get these Bolt flashbacks, but I think we're all just lucky as track fans to have the Tobogo, Knighton, and Lyles, three of the all-time great sprint talents, competing at the same time. It's just, we're spoiled. It's going to be an amazing Olympics because these guys are all so good and have been so good since from a very young age.
Yeah, Bolt became so good, you forget how quick Tyson Gay was. And then also I sort of dismissed Tyson Gay because at some point he started cheating. I don't know. So then I sort of just discount everything you did. And it's also easy to forget about him just because of Bolt. But there's no way a guy gives up the 400 for the 100, gives up 100 for the 400. But I just checked. The 100, 400, 200 triple It might be possible if you can use the repechage. What's it called? The
repechage.
We finally have a reason for this. The 400 round one is right before the 100 semis. Can he say, I'm not ready, I can't run, or maybe false start? If you false start, can you get in the repechage? False start the 400 round one, do the 100 semis and final that day. Then you run the 400 the next day, the repechage round, go through the back door back into the 400. Let me keep going with the schedule here to see if there's any overlap with the two.
Oh my God, that would be phenomenal. He just goes out and he walks a lap in the 400 prelims so he can get into
the repechage. Let me check the 200 schedule, make sure there's no problem here. Oh no, we started having a lot more overlap, I think. Damn it. Yeah, the 200 semifinal is the day of the 400 final.
Wait a minute. I just looked. This was run in Pretoria, South Africa. That's some altitude. According to Jonas Marika, it's worth 0.31 of a second. So 44.29 becomes 44.6. He actually ran 44.75 last year. And that was in July, though. So if he's 0.15 a second ahead now, let's see, he's a quarter second ahead for 400, so that would be 0.125 in the 200. So his 19.5 becomes a 19.37. Has the Lyles run that, John?
19.37, yeah, his PB is 19.31. Actually, I didn't realize the altitude, he thinks the conversion says it's that much, that it's only a 44.6. I might want to back off of my take that he could probably win the Olympic 400 if he trained for it. I mean, we do take this for granted. Like, it's still very hard to win an Olympic title in the 400 meters. And I shouldn't be making light of the fact that some guy who just, he runs a 44.2 in March at altitude, he can immediately do it. But he's also 20 years old and he's not training for that event specifically. So I just wouldn't put it totally out of the question. I don't think he'll change events. I think he'll do the 100, 200. It's good news. I guess the interesting thing is him and Lyles taking somewhat different approaches, because Lyles has been working the indoor season on his start, his first 40 meters, and he's made significant gains in that area. Tobogo taking the opposite tack. He's running longer over distance events, but maybe it's just they're both trying to sort of work on their weaknesses and they'll meet in the middle.
Well, I think that's it, because as a junior, Tobogo was winning World Juniors in the 100 and then not winning in the 200. He won the bronze and he won the gold in the 100 in 2021 and 2022, and he won the silver in the 200 both years. So he was much more viewed as a 100 guy. And then now we see him working on his strength, and he's the only guy we've ever seen gain no Lyles 200. So I think it's more, maybe he thinks himself as a natural 100 guy. I'm going to work on getting stronger, and that's going to help the two. And it's kind of weird, though, if they flip and we think he ends up being better at the 200 than the 100. And could Lyles possibly win gold in the 100 but not the 200? Wow, that would be crazy.
I mean, we've seen stuff like that before. Remember the 1980 Olympics in Moscow? You had Ko and Ovette. And Ko was the heavy favorite in the 800, and he got beat by Ovette. And then Ovette was expected to win the 15, and Ko won it. So we could see, like, Lyles, there is some precedent for Lyles coming in. He's the heavy favorite in the 200. He wins the 100, but not the 200.
Or I guess even Tokyo. Chapter guy doesn't win the 10, but he wins the 5, even though he's Mr. 10K.
Yep. Another reminder, the Olympics are going to be awesome. And it also made me think, like, Tobogo is the youngest and the fastest in the 100, or sorry, the fastest that young, you know, whatever. Well, junior record holder. I don't think Singa get to be the record holder, even though he tested positive. I don't know how that works. But it just got me excited about the young talent in the 100 right now, because you've got Kashane Thompson of Jamaica. He's 22. He ran 985 last year. Oblique Seville, who's 23, ran 986 last year. Tobogo, who's 20, ran 988 last year. Keen Blake, who's 22, ran 989 last year. And I'm just thinking one of those guys is going to make a leap into the 97s this year. You know, at that age, I think it's probably likely someone can do it. If I had to put my money on it, I'd probably say it's Tobogo, but could be one of the Jamaicans as well. It's just, it's going to be interesting.
Actually, I'm feeling better and better about my prediction, because I was predicting one of the Jamaicans to win last year.
Oh, other trivia question. So this came up. It was relevant. We've already discussed this on the podcast. There's only one active American male runner who has an individual Olympic gold medal. Can you name who it is?
Centrowitz.
He's the only one. It kind of surprised me. I was like, wow, there's no one. No one from 2012. It's too long ago. And 2000.
Wait, counting sprints too?
Counting sprints as well.
Wait, what?
Yeah. That's wild, right?
There's one active male American runner with a gold medal.
An Olympic or female gold medal. But because no male individual from the United States won an Olympic gold on the track in 2020. In 2016, it was Centrowitz and Caron Clement. Clement is retired. And in 2012, the only individual American male gold medalist was Aries Merritt in the 110 hurdles, and he's retired. So, I mean, that kind of gets to the point. The sprinters, you know, it's been 20 years since an American has won the 100 meters at the Olympic Games on the men's side. It's kind of wild, but that's where we're at.
Well, Bolt, well, I mean,
yeah,
Bolt,
yeah, the GOAT
while.
Came along. He won three straight, but yeah.
Also, like, in Americans, we have this mentality that we dominate the sprints. Well, I mean, Bolt threw things off, but like, it's really hard to win an Olympic gold medal. I mean, I think that's the takeaway from these things. Obviously, that's like it's almost like stating the obvious. We're like, oh, wait, Americans are winning medals all the time because we are the best country at track and field. But, you know, as you noted, John, zero gold medals for the men.
What makes it weird is that in the championships surrounding that, the Americans have absolutely dominated the short sprints. 2019, 2022, 2023, American men won the 100 and 200 at all three of those world championships, including 2022, the year after the Olympics. They went 1, 2, 3. That's why it's odd that they have this gold medal drought, because in world championship years, the Americans have completely dominated the sprints on the men's side. But Tokyo, you know, Fred Curley was close, but he didn't get the win in the 100. Lyles was off his game, only got bronze. And Grant Holloway, who usually always wins the 110 hurdles at Worlds, got outleaned. He got pipped by, why can't I remember Hansel Parchment's name? Yeah. So any of those races, you know, go slightly differently, but it's just it was an outlier compared to the world championships where Americans have owned those events. All right, so I think that's going to do it for this episode, though. Weldon, do you want to keep this for our Supporters Club members, or is this coming for everyone, that the hidden tapes from our Monday conference call where we talk about what life was like on the Earth 1,200 years ago, and we wonder what people did for fun? It was a somewhat strange discussion that I didn't think was going to be recorded for a podcast, but here we are.
You never know what you're going to get on the Monday call. We went from discussing this thread about some guy saying, I don't wear deodorant, sort of wondering how he exists. And then Robert quickly went disgusting. What did people do back then? There was no 7-Eleven, no deodorant, no TV, no books.
I don't think there was even letsrun.com, was there? Did they have PCs back in like 673 AD?
I think the PC was like 1492, right, John? But anyway, then John just opened up with a history lesson about the history of the world. All right, we'll say that for Supporters Club members. If you want to hear the audio clip and you want a second podcast on Friday, we have a second podcast just for Supporters Club members. We usually give you a weekend preview. I don't know if we have anything to preview this week.
Yeah, we might need to get weird on Friday, because I don't think there's any event. There's no races this weekend to talk about.
This might be the shoulder period where we always find stuff to talk about. We found good stuff to talk about even during COVID. But if you got something for us, call 1-844-LETS-RUN. Leave a voicemail, option 7. But otherwise, Supporters Club members, here's the Monday morning call audio. Everybody else, see you next week.
Don't forget, you can get your t-shirt for 26.52% off. Go to shop.letsrun.com today. Enter the code 2652. Big 26.52%. I have all the sizes in on the Let's Run shirts. Back in stock.